The Committee of Higher Education and Workforce Development will be in order. Today's date is Tuesday, February 5th. So welcome all those who are in attendance today. Today is a day that we are looking forward to, where we're actually going to have two presentations. The first, hearing from the Regent candidates. And in the past, the first time that the legislature has heard in a formal way from Regent candidates has been at the Joint Committee, which the Joint Committee, by the way, is Tuesday, February 26th at 6:30 p.m. in room 200 in the State Office Building. That Joint Committee will be an opportunity where members can ask many questions of the Regent candidates, and is really a give and take. So this is not that. Yet, we wanted to have an opportunity for the senators. I know many senators have met one-on-one with these candidates, but we wanted to have an opportunity on the record to just hear 5 minutes. We've asked our candidates to give us 5 minutes of testimony, and we have submitted the questions ahead of time and have asked the Regent candidates to address the questions that we've asked to the committee. So we will not ask questions at this time, and we will be clear about the 5 minutes, because following that, then we will hear from the university. President Kaler will begin with his budget request, and we are looking forward to that, as well as to the many testifiers who are going to be part of that presentation. So members, I know it's confusing to come to G15. There's a finance committee meeting that overlaps, and so that's why they bumped us down here, but I think it's the perfect room for the many people that we have here today. So with that, I'm going to call on first the regents who are applying to be regents again, who serve currently as regents. And so in honor and respect for their service, we are beginning with them. And so I'll begin with Regent Linda Cohen.
Thank you, Chair Bonoff and members of the committee. I'm Linda Cohen, as you probably know, and I currently have the great privilege to be the chair of the board of the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. I have two passions. One is education, and the other is good governance. And that's why the questions that are put before us, and I hope that you all have a copy of those questions, were very intriguing to me. I, as a regent, with my colleagues on the board, govern the University of Minnesota. And I want to make an important distinction. We do not manage the university. We have delegated that authority to an extremely able person who's right behind me, and his administrative staff, and with help from faculty and students. So in our role as a governing board, we govern. And what does that mean? To me, it means oversight. And as I look at what my three guiding principles are in oversight, I want to mention all three. The first is that it is so important whatever we do advances the mission of the university, the teaching and learning, the research and innovation, and the outreach and public engagement. So whatever I think about, does this honor our heritage and advance the mission of the university? The second principle is building and keeping the public trust, and doing that by our oversight, by careful oversight for fiscal accountability, and that's, of course, been in the news lately, but also academic quality. The quality of our teaching and our research is equally as important. And the third principle for me is balance, balancing the wants and needs of many constituents, the faculty, the students, the administration, the families, the people of Minnesota, which leads me seamlessly, I hope, to the next set of questions. How responsible do I feel to the people of Minnesota? Hugely responsible. This is their university, and I feel a great responsibility. And how responsible do I feel to the legislature? Because you are representatives of the people of Minnesota, I feel a great responsibility to you. I've always thought when one has a lot of freedom, that one has even greater responsibility. And that may be why I feel very responsible. Because the university has a great gift from our forefathers, the territorial government, and then our state constitution. We have the gift of autonomy. And with that gift of freedom comes huge responsibility. And so in answer to the question about whether I think it's reasonable for the legislature to make specific policies for the university, I don't believe it is. What I do believe is important and reasonable and appropriate is that you make suggestions, that we collaborate and cooperate and work together to make this university as good as it can be. And so lastly, what impact would I like to have? I would like to influence the Board of Regents into becoming an even more highly functional and highly proficient board. It seems to me that if we have a Board of Regents that is functioning at the highest levels, that we will have an organization that this trickles down and our university will function at very high levels. It would mean that the Board of Regents, which I believe functions at a very high level now, there's always room for improvement, can make wise decisions for the people of Minnesota. I think my skills really help that because I'm a really good listener. I help to bring people with divergent point of views together so they can understand, maybe not agree with, differing points of view and come to positions where we can move the university forward. I believe being a regent, one needs to be a team player. I think I am a team player, and I would very much like to continue on the team for another 6 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Regent Cohn. So before we go ahead, you can come to the podium, Regent Johnson. Before we hear from Regent Johnson, I'm going to ask my staff to just remind members what the questions were and those in the audience. So, Mr. Kornecki, if you would be so kind as to read us the three questions that we had asked the candidates to answer.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Board of Regents is charged with governing the University of Minnesota. How do you envision the role of a regent in managing the university? What principles and ideas will guide you in managing the university? What is your concept of the role of a regent in relation to the role of the administrators of the university, such as the president of the university? Continuing, regents are selected by legislators who are representatives of the people of Minnesota. As a regent, what do you think your responsibility is to the legislature and the people of Minnesota? Do you think it is reasonable for the legislature to prescribe policies for the University of Minnesota? And finally, if given the opportunity to be a regent, what impact do you hope to have on the University of Minnesota? And copies of these questions will be coming down shortly.
Regent Johnson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Dean Johnson, a current member of the Board of Regents at an at-large position. I live in Willmar, Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity to present to you, the members of the Higher Ed Committee, our thoughts about the University of Minnesota as a sitting member and seeking to be reelected as a member of the Board of Regents. Three questions that I would like to address. What is the role of a regent? Two, what is the responsibility of a regent? And thirdly, how can one, as a Board of Regent member, impact the University of Minnesota and its mission? First, what is the role of a regent? I've often thought that one of the things that brings to the Board of Regents is simple, good common sense. And that common sense is derived from life experiences. Having grown up on a farm, having served in this body for 28 years, having served in the military for 38 years, having been a parish pastor for almost 40 years, Simply good common sense of listening to people is a principle that I bring to the Board of Regents. Second of all, I think the principle to remember this is a land-grant university, 150 years old, and the principle of remembering what a land-grant university and its rich history in our state is certainly very important. Thirdly, the principle of teaching, research, and discovery and outreach must be at the forefront, and thinking about that in terms of our students as well as our faculty. The University of Minnesota is about students and the faculty, teaching and research. All other things may seem important, but that is the fundamental reason that we have the University of Minnesota in our state. Finally, I want the University of Minnesota, which is a worldwide organization, not just state of Minnesota, not national, it's a worldwide organization of teaching and research, to be the best university in the world. And I think we work toward that each and every day. Second of all, the question, what is the responsibility of a regent? The most important vote that I have taken in the last 6 years is after a long period of searching, asking questions, of due diligence, was the day I cast the vote for the gentleman sitting to my left, President Eric Kaler. That is one of the most, if not the most important votes that a regent can cast, the hiring of the CEO, the president. And I believe we have done a very, very good job in the hiring of President Kaler to lead our university. The responsibility in the matters of autonomy, which my colleague Regent Cohn talked about, yes, we are granted autonomy in the charter, but I call it autonomy with transparency and cooperation. First of all, the people of Minnesota do own this university. It's very important that we are responsible to the people of this state, but also to the governor and the 201 members of the legislature. You provide approximately 18% to 20% of our funding, and therefore we are responsible to you in the matters of autonomy and in the budgetary process. So, what impact can one make? Well, I go to the basic question: what does a regent do? I talked about the hiring of a president. Second of all, we pass on a budget, which influences the tuition. We pass on all matters of real estate and buildings, faculty tenure, course offerings. We receive gifts. We grant degrees. And that is one of the very good things. Mostly in the month of May and June, we hand diplomas. We grant degrees. And hopefully that degree, that diploma, will be of great value to our students as they move forward. Finally, the impact. First, we're ambassadors. We attend many social functions, many sporting functions. We're asked to go many places. We are the ambassadors for the University of Minnesota. We stick up for the University of Minnesota here at the legislature and in the social circles that we attend. Second of all, we are to impact, we encourage public engagement. The university does not act in a vacuum. We extend our antennas to Rochester, to Crookston, to UMD, to Morris, to St. Paul, and across the state in matters of medicine, agriculture, engineering, mining, forestry, all those things. It is a huge, large organization of public engagement. Another impact we can make is affordability as we deal with the budget. We are ever cognizant of tuition, of costs of operating the University of Minnesota, and we know it's the students that pay a large part of that bill. And unless we go to a regents meeting, and I can't think of any time in the last 6 years that we have not talked about students. Students are fundamental, and as they pay in the matters of tuition, we need to keep that in the forefront. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it has been a wonderful experience being a member of the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. I'm proud to have served the last 6 years, and at the appropriate time, I would ask for your consideration and vote to continue my service to the university and to the students and faculty and staff of this university. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And actually, both of you have kept it exactly 5 minutes. So we will let people know if the time goes over with just a little piece of paper nudging you. But you did a great job, both of you. Thank you. So next, we've got Mr. Kelly Smith. And so the reason why Mr. Smith is coming now is because he, too, is for consideration of at-large delegate, which is the same as what the two prior candidates were.
Chair Bonhoff and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Kelly Smith, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon. As Chair Bonhoff mentioned, I'm one of the candidates for the two at-large positions that are open. I'd like to take a few minutes to just share my personal background, professional experiences, and my passion for the University of Minnesota. I've been married for 27 years to my wife, Chris, who is a registered nurse, and we have three children who have recently been through post-secondary institutions. My oldest daughter is currently a third-year Doctor of Podiatric Medicine student in Des Moines. My second daughter is a University of Chicago graduate who worked in public policy for 1 year and is now teaching English language learners in New York City. And my son Joe is most recently attended the University of Minnesota at Duluth and is working as a personal care attendant. I tell you that because I want to assure you that I understand the impact that the costs of higher education have on parents and families today. I've recently experienced it, and it is becoming a greater and greater concern. I'm currently in my 21st year as a school superintendent in Minnesota, having served four school districts in that period of time, most currently serving in my ninth year as a superintendent for the Belle Plaine Public Schools. I've also been a small business owner. My wife and I were partners in Lyle's Cafe in Winthrop, Minnesota during our stay there for 5 years and did sell to our partner as we moved to pursue my first full-time superintendency. My passion for the University of Minnesota began at a very early age as our family was heavily involved in 4-H programs in Lyon County in southwest Minnesota, and my children were involved in 4-H as they grew up in Grant County. I attended the University of Minnesota Morris, majoring in mathematics education with a minor in business. The U has granted various degrees to members of my family, including an agribusiness degree from the St. Paul campus at the U, a med school degree, veterinary school degree, and a business degree from the University of Minnesota Duluth campus. I myself received my doctorate of education from the university in 2003. Currently a member of the University Alumni Association and have been for the past 7 years. My experience as a superintendent has given me a strong background in governance, working with school boards ranging from 6 to 25 members. I've been directly involved in contract negotiations with union and non-union bargaining groups and have worked extensively in policy development, financial planning, and academic advancement. Been active with educational organizations throughout the state of Minnesota, such as the Minnesota Rural Education Association, the Schools for Equity in Education Group, and the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. As a board member, legislative committee member, and executive committee member, currently I am the past president for the Minnesota Association of School Administrators after serving as their president for the 2011-12 school year. In response to the questions submitted by the committee, I believe the Board of Regents sets the vision and the policy of the university, and its primary responsibility is the hiring of the president to administrate on behalf of the university. As a regent, I would be guided by the principles of trust, integrity, transparency, and collaboration. Principles that have guided me well throughout my 21 years as a school superintendent. I believe that regents need to be asking critical questions of proposals brought before them to ensure that the requests properly serve the mission of the university. As I mentioned, one of the major responsibilities of a region is hiring of the university president. The regent needs to be actively involved in setting the vision and direction for the university and then work diligently on the ongoing evaluation of the president based on the goals set forth by the board to achieve that vision. As a regent, I believe my responsibilities to the state would be to use the resources of the state of Minnesota in a responsible manner while providing a world-class higher education experience for our students, while providing outreach and public service to our citizens, and while continuing to grow as a premier institute of research and discovery. I believe that the Board of Regents is the policy-making body of the University of Minnesota, and would expect that the legislature would continue to make recommendations for policy, but the ultimate authority lies with the Board of Regents. As a regent, I hope to work with the board to continue the effort of the university to make the institution as financially transparent as possible, to make the attainment of a university degree less financially burdensome for all, and to improve the standing of the university in all public university ranking statistics. Madam Chair, members of the community, I want to thank you once again for the opportunity to share my remarks today.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we're going to move to the candidates for the 5th District. So we'll begin by asking Peggy Lucas to come forward. Just an overview. Ms. Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look around. I think I've talked with most of you, and I honestly am impressed with the dedication and the caring that this committee seems to have for the university.
And Ms. Lucas, mission. I'm sorry, would you say your name for the record?
I'm
I should
sorry.
Always have told people
okay,
that. Thank
Peggy,
you.
Peggy Lucas.
Okay.
I live in Minneapolis, and I'm a candidate for the 5th District. The role of the regents, it's a very interesting question for me because in 1995, I was asked to serve on a study committee, independent assessment of the Board of Regents. It was the time when the Board of Regents and the president were having some conflicts, and so I was part of this independent study, and we interviewed, I don't know how many people, legislators, faculty, everybody. And so it was fun for me to go back and look at this study and what we came upon for this purpose of the regents then, I think, is still holds true. So let me read you the final punchline here. We believe that the board's primary role is to ensure that a vision exists for the university, that it be clearly communicated and professionally executed. So I think that's still true. It's important to pick the president, support the president, and be his eyes and ears to make the vision happen. As far as the legislators picking the regents, I think the legislators speak for the state of Minnesota. I mean, you represent your constituents, and it's very important for all of us to listen to you. I don't think that it's proper to prescribe to the Board of Regents what the agenda should be, but we should all have our antenna up and listen and be as responsive as possible. It's a statewide mission, and we need to be sure that that's how we find out what's happening statewide, is to listen to all of you. What impact? You know, I prepared something, maybe I'll just read it, but the impact that I would hope to have is to be eyes and ears. I'm a good networker. I get out there. I have my periscope up at all times. I'm listening. I'm connecting. And I would like to build those connections and bring them to bear on the vision so that we can see the landmines, if there are any, and see the opportunities, if there are any. And I think that my board experience and my experience statewide will serve me well in that. My first public engagement was actually through the League of Women Voters, and that's where I, because of them and because of studying housing, that's how I started my housing business. And then I went on to serve both the local, state, and national league. I was actually the second vice president of the National League of Women Voters for a while. I would like to say that I think those of you that know about the league, we study and we do consensus. And I think that has really shaped the way that I have approached my service on multiple public and non-public boards. So I'd just like to conclude by saying that I believe I've had a really rich and challenging life. I've loved my board service and proud of my career. Service on the Board of Regents to me is not about building a resume, but instead is about giving back to a state and a university who've given a lot to me. I care deeply about the university and its role in the well-being of the state of Minnesota. I believe that when the university lives up to its potential, the state of Minnesota is a winner. I think that I've demonstrated numerous examples of leadership and could bring that to play for the Board of Regents. I think my colleagues will say that I am a good team player. I do my homework. I take my responsibility seriously. I do not grandstand. I do not micromanage. But I am a good networker, and again, the periscope is always up. I'm good at connecting the dots and bringing energy to important ideas. I would be honored to be a regent, and I would feel that that would be a way for me to give back for all that I have been given. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Very good. Dennis Wynn. Hello.
Madam Chair, members of the Distinguished Senate Higher Education Committee, my name is Dennis Nguyen. I live in Minneapolis, and I'm running for the open seat from the 5th Congressional District. I've lived the American dream in both business and life. At a critical juncture in the history of the university, given my record of success generated over a lifetime through international work experience in the private sector, my education credentials, detailed knowledge and deep support of public education in this country, I believe I am uniquely qualified and experienced for election to the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. My passion for the university is due to receiving a full scholarship to attend the University of Minnesota Law School in the mid-1990s. It is this very reason that I am putting myself up for election, because I believe I have the skill set to contribute to our university and our state at a critical juncture in our history. Brief description of myself. I am the son of working-class Vietnamese refugees who came to Southern California in 1975 at the age of 5. I'm the father of 4 young children, ranging from 13 years of age to 10 months. I was a scholar athlete in high school, playing football, basketball, and baseball. Much to the chagrin of the Minnesotans out there, there was no ice hockey at that time in Southern California. I'm a fervent believer in higher education can promote social mobility. I'm a graduate of the University of California, Irvine, in economics and Chinese literature. I received a master's degree in international relations from the Johns Hopkins University in Washington, D.C. I received a Juris Doctor from the University of Minnesota Law School in the mid-1990s, and I received an MBA from the University of Chicago. My full-time daytime job is I run an international private equity investment firm, New Asia Partners. New Asia Partners, over the last 10 years of my life, we have invested in more than 15 entrepreneurial and innovative companies in the following 4 sectors: health services, alternative energy, consumer retail, and food and beverage. I have taken 5 companies public in Hong Kong, Singapore, New York, and, of course, London, served on 3 companies, public companies' boards, and numerous private company boards. I am a passionate supporter of my alma mater, the University of Minnesota. I am a former University of Minnesota adjunct law professor for the past 3.5 years and a current member of the University of Minnesota Board of Advisors. In response to the questions, first, I believe that the responsibilities of the University of Minnesota Board of Regents is to clarify the 3-part mission of the university, which is teaching, research, and outreach, and to prove such programs to fill this mission. As a general rule, boards focus on setting long-term strategy and policies while management deal with the running of the organization. In the case of the University of Minnesota, the Board of Regents shall focus on governance, while the university administration deals with the day-to-day operations of the university. In such an organizational setup, we recognize that the president is the primary spokesperson for the university, and the chair of the Board of Regents is the only person authorized to speak for the board. Number two, regents accept fiduciary responsibility for the long-term welfare of the state of Minnesota, for the University of Minnesota, I'm sorry. Our responsibility is to represent all the people of the state of Minnesota and no particular interest, community, or constituency. One can apply this reasoning to the legislature of the state of Minnesota. In fact, the university charter provides that the government of this university shall be vested in the board of 12 regents, and the board has certain powers, including the power and to and duty to enact laws for the government of the university. So the governance of the University of Minnesota rests solely with the Board of Regents. It would be inappropriate for the legislature to, quote, prescribe policies for the University of Minnesota, unquote. Finally, what I intend to do as a regent. I present myself as a non-ideological businessman who has the skills to contribute immensely to the Board of Regents. The impact of my regentship has following three focuses. I'd like to use my finance acumen. I'd like to leverage my 15-year career in high finance, in investment bank and private equity, to work with our fellow regents and the university administration to propose out-of-the-box strategic insights to resolve the university's funding issues, create additional revenue streams, and find new business partners and streamline administrative costs. Two, I want to leverage my international experience. Although raised in the United States from the age of 5 to 24, I was born in Vietnam and I've spent more than half of my adult life living overseas. And finally, recognizing that we, as third reason why I'm running, is recognizing we as a state are as only as strong as our weakest residents, I would like to be an advocate and a role model for members of historically disenfranchised communities. It would be an honor for me, Madam Chair, and members of the distinguished committee, to be elected as regent. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Arturo Tuzcu. And I'm not sure if I said your last name properly, but you'll set me straight when you introduce yourself.
Madam Chair and the members of the committee, my name is pronounced as Arturo Tuzcu.
Oh, it's a silent G. Good. Thank you.
And so, for the record, I appreciate being here, having the opportunity to be considered for being a Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota candidate. And before I start answering the questions, I'd like to tell you a little story about myself. I was born in Yugoslavia and raised in Turkey and went to a college called Boğaziçi University, and it was the only American college at the time called Robert College, and graduated with a mechanical engineering degree. And my family thought I was set for life and I could have a great job, get married to a Turkish girl, and the rest is history. But that wasn't my plan. My plan was to come to the United States and further my education. As my advisor was a graduate of the University of Minnesota, a Turkish professor, who had talked to me about Minnesota many times and convinced me that that's the place to go. And of course, my family said, you're on your own if you want to go. And I had $1,000, and I came to University of Minnesota with $1,000 and paid a non-resident tuition of $980.68 and began my journey. It was the best $1,000 I've spent since. So in response to your questions, here are my answers and thoughts. Simply, I see the role of a regent to help govern the university and not manage it. I'm committed to the University of Minnesota and its excellence with clear understanding of its role in education, research, outreach, economics and innovation in the state, nation, and the world as well. As we are experiencing significant demographic shift with global challenges and opportunities and unprecedented technological changes, I have the time, the business experience, and desire to help govern and meet the strategic challenges with an innovative and creative perspective, sound judgment, and integrity. As a regent, I will see myself with my fellow regents setting policy, overseeing strategic direction of the U, challenging the president and the administrators to further the excellence of the U, and help create a culture of change. In the times we live, change is a must. And culture of change needs to be part of the university culture as it evolves. As a region selected by the legislatures, of Minnesota. I feel we owe the state of Minnesota a university that seeks excellence in teaching, research, and outreach, and serves as its economic engine with new technologies and job creation. I believe the regents need to listen to the legislatures as representatives of the people of Minnesota, and they need to govern the university with sound principles and goals of excellence in everything they do. And that's where I draw the line. If given the opportunity to be a regent, I bring a background of big business experience at Target Corporation. And I think University of Minnesota has become a large corporation. And I will bring the experience of having merged five companies together, Dayton's and Hudson Department Stores, then Marshall Fields, then May Company, then Macy's, under one umbrella. And having overseen 35,000 people, $3.3 billion in business, $1.1 billion in budget, and having worked with board of directors to union employees, I feel I'm positioned to be able to help the university in its governance. And besides those duties, I have board governance experience with reputable organizations like Walker Arts Center, Minneapolis Downtown Council, as the chair of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association, Detroit Regional Chamber, and recently Minnesota International Center. I am now a teacher myself at the University of St. Thomas Graduate School teaching MBA-level leadership courses. So I see firsthand what education needs to be and will be. And also I've served for the service organizations for a long time, where I understand how to create a service organization to its constituents. I would feel privileged if I am selected to serve as a regent. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now we have an addition, Jessica Hasten. And members, so the Regent Council Advisory Council Committee, has put forward candidates. And we have this latitude, obviously, as the legislature. So, for example, we heard Ms. Lucas as a 5th District candidate, although she was put forward as an at-large candidate, because that is, again, the latitude the legislature has. So, again, while Ms. Hasten was not put forward by the council, she was a candidate and has requested to speak before the committee, and we've honored that request. So, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Bonoff and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Hasten, and I am a candidate for regent at the University of Minnesota for the 5th Congressional District. My life has revolved around the university since I moved to Minnesota from Wisconsin over 17 years ago, and I owe the opportunities that I have had to the education and employment the university has offered me. I attended the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus and received a cultural studies and comparative literature undergraduate. I attended school full-time for my first couple of years, and then I found that working full-time at the School of Public Health and Epidemiology while finishing my undergraduate part-time was the most successful combination for me. I went on to receive a master's in advocacy and political leadership at the University of Minnesota Duluth and faithfully made the drive up I-35 47 times in 2 years to complete the degree. University was able to offer me many pathways to become a productive citizen, which I find inspiring. As regent, I will work to ensure policies are enacted to make college more affordable to students. I believe that can be done through supporting the president's initiatives as well as reducing administrative costs. My experiences of serving and working with people through my career at the U in nonprofits and in my current position at the Minnesota AFL-CIO allow me to understand the university's role in building a strong education that creates jobs that can support a family, jobs which allow families to send their kids to college as well as save for retirement. As a regent, I will support policies that will create excellence in education, outstanding research, and good jobs. The university has also helped me to hone in my leadership skills that I use every day. I sit on the inaugural AFL-CIO Young Worker Advisory Council, and this National Advisory Council was created to help shape the directions that 12 million unionized workers take to maintain and develop rights in the workplace, especially for young people. Other leadership roles I hold include board positions for Witness for Peace, my local union, and from 2004 to 2011, I sat on the board of Stevens Square Community Organization, which is a civic engagement nonprofit that represents over 4,000 residents in Minneapolis. So you can see from volunteering where I live, my leadership roles in my career, to my volunteerism overseas, that I believe it is important to be accountable to my neighborhood, my workplace, and the global community. And this is one of my guiding principles. So it's with this passion that I want to serve as the University of Minnesota Regent. My vision for the university as a regent starts with a clear understanding that the role of the Board of Regents is to govern. With stewardship of that university in mind, I will follow the roles and responsibilities laid out by the University of Minnesota's Board of Regents policy. Among those, the most critical roles of the Board of Regents is to hire the president, as stated before, and then to work with the president and his or her administration to hold them accountable. I believe it's imperative that the Board of Regents doesn't get into the day-to-day management of the university. I believe that as a regent, I will be a good steward of resources for the universities as well as the taxpayers of Minnesota while advancing the excellence of education. It will be my responsibility as regent to be an advocate for the university and an ambassador as well, and to be available to listen to the concerns of legislators as well as the people of Minnesota, and to respond to these concerns through the president and appropriate channels. Finally, I want to become a regent at the University of Minnesota to give back to my community. Public service is one of the highest honors in democracy. Thank you for your time today, and I want to thank those of you who've met with me so far, and I look forward to meeting with the rest of you soon.
Thank you very much. Finally, we have our student candidates. We will welcome them. Drew Covey. Sorry, I apologize.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today.
So say your name for the record.
Yes. My name is Drew Covey, and I am currently enrolled at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus as an undergraduate in my second year of study. I'm majoring in journalism with a focus in public relations. I'm interested in a career of advocacy and nonprofit communication. I am very involved in the Twin Cities campus. I participate in the University Honors Program. I work at both the University Libraries and the Office of Admissions, and I'm treasurer for the multicultural student groups on campus, the American Indian Student Cultural Center. I'm also becoming involved in some administrative processes by serving on a search committee for the Vice Provost for Student Affairs and Dean of Students, where I am one of two undergraduate members that work to represent the perspective of the 30,000 undergrad students on the Twin Cities campus. I graduated from high school in Illinois and chose to attend the University of Minnesota for my undergraduate degree. It is refreshing to hear student costs being discussed so fervently, because that was one of the main factors that drove my consideration of out-of-state colleges, as I'm actually saving money by coming here as an out-of-state student instead of staying at a rival Big Ten university in Illinois. I bring with me a vast breadth and depth of knowledge about the university and what it offers to its students. After all, part of my job at admissions is to know as much as possible about what we have to offer students. My close ties to several communities on campus allow me an informed and varied perspective, which would be extremely valuable to the board, as most members, if they have ever attended the university, have not done so for quite a few years. While the student representatives to the board do work to inform members of the student perspective, it is imperative that the voting body has members with insight to the campus environment, as it has changed a lot, especially within the last 10 years, as a new focus has been put on the undergraduate education and the division into seven freshmen in many colleges. I'm on track to graduate with the average student debt amount at the U of M, $25,000. While this is no small amount, I am thankful to the scholarships I've received and the assistance that my parents are able to provide, as $25,000 is much smaller than some students and their debt. And it is very much a frequent occurrence in my work at admissions. We aren't able to recruit a student due to the high cost of attendance. And there are definitely many talented individuals that we do miss out on educating and then putting right back in the Minnesota economy due to that cost. As a regent, I would work to increase accessibility to higher ed. Yes, high tuition is a problem that colleges across the nation, but there's no reason that the U of M cannot be a leader in reducing costs. As a regent, I would be a member of the governing body of the university, not a member of its management team. As part of the governing body, I would work to create the guiding policies and to clarify the mission, but the only management function that I see as appropriate for the board is just to work with the president and the other top-level administrators. The board's duty is to work to keep the university operating as well as possible. As a main driver of Minnesota's economy, the state needs university to be as good as possible and to be extremely efficient with its research initiatives and turning out talented individuals. However, I think that the duty of governing the university is the board's alone. I do not think that the legislature should be prescribing policies specifically for the University of Minnesota. Both due to the issue of autonomy, as well as I do not think that the legislature has nearly enough contact and is not exposed enough to the university to be sure that its policies would be effective. The board has been prescribed that responsibility and, in my opinion, should be the one to do so. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Abdul Omari.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time. My name is Abdul Omari. Staff members, I appreciate the work that you've put in, and thank you to the audience members for caring about the university as well. I come to you today as a hometown boy from South Minneapolis, born and raised to a mother from the Middle East and a father from East Africa that came here in the early 70s to do what people call live the American dream. They came to get associate's degrees from MCTC. One finished, one didn't, but they both worked extremely hard. One in the service industry, another one a small business owner. Raised five children in South Minneapolis, me being the baby. Through their hard work and the opportunity that Minnesota gave them, I was able to attend the University of Minnesota. I obtained a undergraduate degree in global studies in 2008, went on to get a master's in public policy in 2010, and then they let me in again, and now I'm getting a doctorate in international education. Throughout that time, I was able to serve as the vice president for the Black Student Union, serve as the president for my fraternity and a regional representative, and the vice president of the Public Affairs Student Association at the Humphrey Institute, and then fortunate and privileged to have 2 years under my belt as one of eight student representatives to the Board of Regents. That sparked my interest in serving as a student regent. I was encouraged to do so. I think that I have a tremendous amount of value that I can bring to the board through those experiences. The U has also given me the opportunity to study abroad 3 times throughout my time there. Because of that, it has led to me wanting to give back. My research is focused on mentoring, which I'll begin to engage in the fall, and the way that mentoring and youth-adult relationships provide access and ways for young people to pursue their educational dreams, particularly looking at populations that are usually grouped together, for example, African Americans, East Africans, and West Africans. Considering the questions that you guys have given us, as many people have said, I do see the role of the Board of Regents as a governing role. I think that I think that it's very important for us to work with the administration. President Kaler does a wonderful job, in my opinion, and if appointed, I'd look forward to working with him as well as the other regents in governing, setting the vision for the university long term, and ensuring that we maintain top class education, research, and service. As far as principles go, I'd come to you with the principle of listening, analyzing, and then offering an opinion and suggestions. I come to you as as somebody who will keep students at the fore and ask the question for everything that is presented before us: how does this impact students, how does this impact access, and how does this impact the land-grant mission and the tripartite mission of the University of Minnesota? I think that the biggest responsibility that we have to the state and to the legislature is one of transparency, one of communication, and working with rather than for, researching with rather than for, and teaching with rather than for. And when we are able to communicate in a transparent way, we'll be able to move the mission of the university forward. In there, I also do believe that while working with the legislature, that the governing body, the regents, are the ones who should set policy. The last question, as we think about 6 years down the line, if I were appointed in this position, I would hope to leave one of access. I was raised 15 minutes from the University of Minnesota. My first memory being there was my freshman orientation. That is an absolute tragedy. And I wanted to leave the state of Minnesota and did not want to attend the University of Minnesota. But I see every day through teaching, through my service, and my work as a student, that dreams come true at the University of Minnesota. And I truly believe that. And we need to make sure that young people around this state are able to have their dreams come true as well. In doing so, I see my journey as a cyclical one. My parents were given an opportunity to come to Minnesota. They worked extremely hard. I was given opportunities at the U, and in that, I want to give back now. With more time, I'd come up and give you guys all handshakes, but I appreciate your time, and I look forward to your support.
Thank you very much. And finally, our last region candidate, Christopher Tasted.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Christopher Tasted. I am a candidate for student at large for the Board of Regents. I want to say, first of all, I appreciate the time and dedication that you put into this process. This additional hearing is a great opportunity to introduce ourselves outside of the several meetings that we've set up and the continuation of this process as we go forward. So I guess just being a student and the nature of our role, we have a resume and a list of accomplishments that's a little less vetted, so I'd like to touch a little bit on my personal background. My personal story starts in Montevideo, Minnesota, out in western Minnesota there. I'm the son of a nurse. My mother's been an RN for about 25 years, and my father works in the dairy industry for a company called American Milk Producers Incorporated. I would say to a certain extent my experience in that small town and what I bring to my now experience at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus is an understanding of rural perspective, one that understands that there's a balance that the state sees in the way that the university interacts with it, and one that understands that there's an investment that needs to be made that is a statewide in the relationship with the support that the people and the legislature of Minnesota provide as well. My story then continues to, like I mentioned, my undergraduate degree at the University of Minnesota. I studied biochemistry, and in accomplishment through that degree, I was able to participate in several activities, both leadership and academic, on campus. In doing so, I feel I developed a reasonable level of experience and understanding of the university that actually very nicely correlates with each of the aspects of the university's mission, that being teaching and service, research and discovery, or excuse me, teaching and learning, research and discovery, and philanthropy and outreach. The first of those, and one that probably best describes my overall academic experience, is doing research in the Stem Cell Institute at the University of Minnesota. In this department and over the course of the past 5 years, I've been able to participate in the expansion of our understanding when it comes to the development of muscle with the application of adult stem cells with the focus of molecular biology. In doing so, I've had the opportunity to participate in grant development, publications with which I was an author, and also the development of collaborations with private business and funding as well in the commercialization of our research. I feel this experience greatly advances what I understood about the university and serves as a core facet of what the university's mission is. It goes forward not just in teaching and learning, but also in its enterprise function as well. Other elements of experience that I've had at the university are in the facet of teaching. I was able to serve as a teaching assistant in integrated biology for 3.5 years, and I feel I was able to not only understand the experience of what it means to teach at the university, but also be a part of a meaningful and conversation at the forefront of what the university is doing in its initiatives in teaching, and not just disseminating information, but actually engaging students in that process of learning. And lastly, in service, I had a great deal of time spent at the Shriners Children's Hospital, where I volunteered my time and continue to do so as a part-time employee. This in particular holds a great deal of importance to me because I myself in that hospital was a patient throughout my childhood, having needed accessible and affordable access to prosthetics as I suffered a severe injury as a child. So in addition to all of that, I feel that collectively presents a meaningful set of experience that places a broad view of what happens on the ground at the university, and I hope to effectively carry that in a meaningful way to the board. One additional aspect of experience that I hope to bring to the board is one of advocacy as well. And in some respects, the ultimate avenue that brought me to this process, kind of leaving the laboratory and coming to the Capitol. In doing so, I've come to understand and appreciate the concepts of advocacy and what it means to represent an issue and not just hold it, but actually push it forward and meaningfully advocate on behalf of it. In doing so, I was able to found the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition and lead the unification of all five campuses across the system, again, moving towards an understanding of the statewide impact of the university, and ultimately was awarded the Advocate of the Year Award in doing so. So with that, in that service and in oriented nature of serving through advocacy, I was able to effectively understand and learn a great deal about the operation of the university and what that means. And bringing that into the context of what the role of a regent is, I was able to effectively understand and appreciate what it means to be and serve as a regent. And that would be to, it first and foremost, embrace, disseminate, and keep current the mission of the University of Minnesota as an individual regent and as a board as a whole. That, has been mentioned many times, comes in the form of selecting and supporting the president of the university. Any management that comes about and administrative work on behalf of the regents is done through that conduit of the president, and it's important that that balance stays in that sense. In doing so, I also have come to appreciate the relationship that exists in accountability for the university as well. The Board of Regents holds a very interesting balance that they have to find in that they are both a bridge to the legislature and people of Minnesota while also being a buffer. No institution in its social work can be a completely an independent institution, but in doing so, there needs no institution can be entirely unaccountable for what they do in their social work towards the people of Minnesota, but at the same time, there cannot be oversight that can interfere with the academic and free nature of the pursuit of knowledge. So the role of the Board of Regents and its accountability is to establish a meaningful relationship, one that sees a two-way street and a meaningful path forward for both parties, that the board can serve the university and also the state as a whole. And in my impact, to summarize briefly, I hope to bring one of engagement and one of active stance, one that takes a role that is actively participating in the functions and constituencies of the university, and one that participates actively in the functions of the board as well. In addition, I hope to bring a unique perspective, one that combines several aspects that are not typically seen on the board, representing the face of an ever-changing economy, one of a student of physical sciences, one of a student from a rural background, and one of an individual that understands the impact of policy nature, the nature of policy decisions. So with that, I will finish. I'm sure President Kaler is excited to start talking about the budget. And I appreciate your efforts in this process, and I look forward to continuing to work with you as we go on. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. So, you know, what outstanding 10 candidates. We are so fortunate to have you all put your hat in the ring and be willing to give back to the university that each and every one of you have expressed such passion. And I know there are regents in the audience who have not come forward, but I'm sure Dr. Kaler or President Kaler will acknowledge those as well. And then one thing I think that we as a committee members, we listen to those questions and answers, and one of the takeaways I got from it is certainly that, in fact, the regents are a governing board and not a managing board. And so we do understand that and appreciate that distinction, and thank you very much for making that crystal clear to everyone here. Thank you. So, President Kaler. So the remainder of our time in committee is really up to the will of President Kaler, and we'll let you take us through your proposal in the way that works best.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. Good afternoon to the members of the committee. My name is Eric Kaler, and I'm a 1982 graduate of the University of Minnesota. And for the past 19 months, I've been honored to serve as the president of our state's only comprehensive research university. Technology is not always at my fingertips. I'll remind you that the University of Minnesota has five campuses across the state, nearly 70,000 students, $800 million a year in research activity, and more than a quarter million living alumni in our 87 counties, with another 250,000 around the world. The map shows our campuses with the block M's, our research and outreach centers with squares, and the circles are our regional extension offices. They all support the threefold core mission of the university: preparing Minnesota's best students for the jobs of tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, discovering new products, new processes, new ideas, new cures, new treatments as part of our research enterprise, which is the eighth largest in the nation among public universities, and engaging in a multitude of ways in statewide public outreach, from partnering with others to help close the state's educational achievement gap to counseling and supporting families across the state via our work in extension. As you mentioned, Madam Chair, there are a collection of Board of Regents members, and if you will forgive me for not introducing them by name, because that is fraught with danger for me, but I welcome all of you being here. Thank you so much. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the university's 2014 and 2015 biennial budget request, the first of my presidency, takes a new approach to our century-and-a-half-old partnership with the state of Minnesota. It is a plan to renew and rejuvenate our partnership with you. This request focuses squarely on our key missions of teaching, research, and public engagement, while also directly responding to the state's leaders and citizens and our students and their families. Here are our goals. Putting students first is the number one goal. In this proposal, we seek to cap tuition for Minnesota undergraduates, stemming the rise in tuition over the past decade. You will hear from two of our undergraduates later today supporting this effort and explaining how rising tuition affected them and their families. Secondly, we commit ourselves to performance and accountability measures and to reduce administrative costs, driving those dollars to our core missions and to our students. Third, we offer a targeted research initiative that takes the university's nation-leading scientific and innovation strengths and matches them to the urgent needs of the state and the job creation possibilities of critical state industries. You will hear from our experts in those fields later today. And you will also hear from a prominent business leader who will testify to the value of the university's research efforts. And finally, our goal and our role in Minnesota are to prepare the next generation of leaders and innovators for the state. With that in mind, we are proposing to partner with the state to forgive debt for our health professional graduates who want to bring their skills and sensibilities to underserved communities in need. You will hear from a fourth-year veterinary student and his desire to serve his boyhood community. It was a former legislative colleague of yours who said of our budget proposal, and I'll quote, "It reflects a new tone, a new commitment, and a new conversation." Those are the words of a former House member, Laura Broad, of New Prague, who's now one of my bosses as a regent at the university. She went on to say at a regents meeting last fall that this request we are presenting today is different and creative because it's not just about what we want. It is about what we're going to do for the state and for the people of Minnesota. Now, let me tell you what we're going to do and why. In putting our budget request together, we asked this overarching question: how can we best secure Minnesota's future? And I know that's a question this body wrestles with every day. But I believe together the U and the state must invest in the young people who will transform our economy and transform our state in the years to come and the years after that. First, we propose a zero increase in tuition for Minnesota resident undergraduates on all of our campuses. To achieve that, the state would commit an incremental $14.2 million each year, and that will allow our students and their families to set their budgets for the biennium and to reduce their debt. The total is $42.6 million over the biennium. The data is indisputable, and groups as respected as the Itasca Project have confirmed the fact that tuition is directly related to the state's investment in higher education. And over 4 years, a tuition freeze would mean this: for an incoming student. On our Twin Cities campus, a two-year timeout on tuition increases would translate into a savings of more than $2,500 for each of our Minnesota resident undergraduates. On our Duluth, Rochester, and Morris campuses, the savings would be $2,493. And at Crookston, where the tuition base is lower, the savings would be $2,133. That's a lot of money for a lot of families. About one-third of our students graduate without any debt. Two-thirds don't. The two-thirds that have debt have an average debt of around $27,000. So by reducing the cost over time by $2,500 by freezing tuition, we could be eliminating nearly 10% of the potential debt load a graduate would carry. The challenge in higher education is to deliver excellence at an affordable price. Who benefits when that happens? The state does. Because we at the university prepare the next generation of smart employees more quickly, and we move them into the workforce. And mostly, students and their families benefit. Proposals critically important to ensuring that the University of Minnesota steers a course towards greater affordability and accessibility. As the state invests in keeping our tuition increases to zero, we at the university will keep our end of the bargain. We will reduce our administrative costs, we will manage risk responsibly and nimbly, and we will once more, as we have done over recent years, considerably tighten our belts on administrative costs. As part of our budget proposal, we will reallocate $28 million of our state appropriation, or 5%, in keeping with Governor Dayton's direction to all of our state agencies. Since the day I was hired, I have been leading efforts to tackle administrative costs. It's been a priority. We do that so that we can be more effective and efficient stewards of state and tuition dollars, drive them from administrative costs and into our core missions of teaching, research, and public engagement, driving those dollars to our students. We have made progress recently, good progress. Here on this slide are just a few examples of what we've done to reduce administrative costs. When a university vice president left us to become the president of another university, we reallocated the work of his office to other units. In doing so, we reduced positions, administrative costs, and the entire vice presidential position. That saves us $1.6 million a year. We eliminated our old-fashioned bursar's office, reducing our costs by about $650,000 a year. We consolidated our libraries on our St. Paul campus for another $130,000 a year. Technology savings, energy savings, they add up. And we are now engaged in analyzing our management of spans and layers and benchmarking our finance, information technology, human resources, and purchasing activities. Plus, we are prepared to hit performance targets. In 2011, the legislature asked us to achieve 3 of 5 performance measures to prove our accountability. We achieved all 5 of those goals. In this request, we're proposing our own targets, and if we hit 3 of those 5, we would free up $11.5 million in appropriation. Those measures are important, increasing our financial aid generated by philanthropy, awarding at least 15,000 degrees on our campuses, thus producing the prepared talent, leadership, and workforce the state needs, increasing our 4- and 6-year graduation rates on our Twin Cities campus, which have improved dramatically over the past decade, maintaining our research and development expenditures, and increasing our patent disclosures from our vibrant Office of Technology Commercialization. For your information, in fiscal year 2012, we had a record 321 disclosures, 71 more than in 2011. So exceeding that is a high bar. I want to repeat the meaning of this proposal. We will be better in just about everything we do, and we will be more affordable for our students. We will improve the national brand of our university and our state, and we will generate and attract more talent for this state, and we will graduate our students in a more timely fashion. We'll bring more university discoveries to the marketplace than ever before, and we will drive Minnesota's innovation agenda and economy. Our goal in research is to bring our discoveries to the marketplace for the common good. We want to pick up the pace on that front. We propose a new comprehensive vision for discovery, research, innovation, and economic vitality in this state. We call it MinDrive, the Minnesota Discovery, Research, and Innovation Economy Funding Program with a capital V. MinDrive is truly a roadmap for this great state to invest in our university strengths, sparking discovery and tackling Minnesota's and the world's most pressing problems. In our budget request, we're seeking $18 million annually from the state for scientific research in four critical emerging fields. These fields are already among the university's exceptional scholarly and educational strengths, and they match up with the state's most pressing needs and emerging industries. And in a few minutes, you will hear from leaders in each of these four areas of research and job creation. Very quickly, let me describe them. Robotics, sensors, and advanced manufacturing. I hope you saw the recent media coverage of the interest of young people in robotics in high schools in Minnesota. We want to make Minnesota a key player in this burgeoning scientific and industrial space and rejuvenate Minnesota's manufacturing economy. It builds on the U's traditional strengths in engineering, material science, computer science, and robotics. Number two, food. Draw a circle 10 miles in radius from this building, and you will encompass the global headquarters of some of the world's largest and most respected food companies. From Cargill to General Mills, from CHS to Land O'Lakes, we are already blessed with activity in this space. And, of course, we have thousands of food producers across the state, and about 20% of our state's economy is driven by agribusiness. We want to bring our expertise at the U to ensure a safe and sustainable food system and a vibrant agricultural sector, and we will be a primary player in solving the problem of what the 9 billion people soon to be on this earth will have to eat. The outcome of MinDrive's food path is clear. We will be poised to be the Silicon Valley of the food technology, food safety, and food supply management world, a home to innovation and invention. Next, water quality, advancing industry. As a chemical engineer, I believe that water will be the oil of the 21st century in the sense that people will probably fight wars over it. This is a critical natural resource that we must use wisely and return to nature in a way that it can be recycled again and again. And that holds for northeastern Minnesota to enable fracking, taconite industry, and around the state as fracking grows. It's a perfect example of how state's problems can be solved in partnering with industry. Finally, the fourth pillar of MinDrive is brain disorders and what's called neuromodulation. Now, fortunately, I have an expert to explain neuromodulation to us in a few minutes, but I do know that it pioneers new technologies and applications for deep brain stimulation and helps provide treatment for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and even addictions. And I know that our medical device industry in the state, which employs 29,000 people and was given birth by the invention of the pacemaker on our campus, is eager to see us push this new frontier of neuromodulation technology. So what will the outcomes of MinDrive be? New industries will flourish, existing industries will advance and adapt, and a new cohort of trained and educated citizens will form a talent pool unequaled in the country. Competition is global and fierce, and Minnesota must be ready to compete on those fronts. I am convinced the long-term return on innovation and the return on investment, that dual ROIs, will be spectacular and will help to drive prosperity in Minnesota for years to come. And as we should, the University of Minnesota should help drive the state's innovation agenda. As we help to prepare talent for the decades to come, we are also finding that many of our health professional students find themselves in deep debt. And at the same time, there are many underserved areas in the state, and we want our students, our graduates, to serve the underserved. At the university, of all the institutions of higher education in the state, we graduate 100% of all of the pharmacists, dentists, and veterinarians, more than 80% of all the physicians, and more than half of the nurse practitioners. Many of them are eager to work in greater Minnesota or in underserved areas in the Twin Cities, but the pay rates may be significantly less than they would find in other parts of the state. We also need health professionals working among underserved populations in Indian lands and in areas designated by the federal government as zones of real need. That's why we're proposing an increase of $1.5 million to the university's appropriation to be used to forgive students' loans if they practice health care in underserved areas. Many of our health sciences professionals graduate with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and you will hear from one in a few minutes. Under our plan, if a young U-grad commits 3 years of service, she would see her outstanding debt reduced by 15% per year, which would mean a total reduction of nearly 40% over those 3 years. It's a twofer. It's an incentive for the new doctor or dentist or vet, and it fills a deep need for communities statewide, and it could help keep those professionals in those areas for years to come. Let me add one other thing, Madam Chair. I know that in his budget, Governor Dayton has included funds to increase the state grants program, and we at the university fully support that proposal. In closing, let me place our request in historic context. In the year 2001, the legislature funded the university with $600 million per year. Since then, we have added 9,000 students. We have established the innovative and growing Rochester campus. We have invested in student advising and counseling that has driven our graduation rates to the highest level ever. We have seen our research enterprise grow by 40% in the past 5 years alone. We've all lived through a revolution in technology that we must continually update for our students, faculty, and employees. We've witnessed a rise in energy costs, and there's been some inflation and some wage increases. But as this graph shows, if you were to fund our full request, the amount in 2015 would be $604.7 million, almost exactly what we received 14 years ago. With that funding for the next 2 years, together as partners, we can stem the rise of tuition for our students, and we can continue to become a more efficient and effective organization and meet accountability standards. We can focus our research to develop and enhance industries, to create jobs, and to prepare the next generation of state leaders, the talent that Minnesota needs for an innovation economy. I believe this is a great deal for our students, their families, the state, and its citizens. And thank you for the opportunity to present it to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, President Kaler. So, President Kaler, would at this point, did you want to call? Are there any questions for President Kaler before we bring up the next person? I think it's a very impressive story, and, you know, we cannot help but be moved and inspired by your vision and your mission and those of your colleagues.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So next, Mr. Polosinski, who's the president and CEO of Land O'Lakes. Thank you for coming to speak on behalf of the university today. We're pleased to have you.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. As noted, I'm Chris Polosinski, president and CEO of Land O'Lakes, and I'm delighted to be here today. We are based in Arden Hills, Minnesota, and are one of Minnesota's largest companies with diversified operations in agribusiness and food production. Most of you probably are familiar with our dairy case brand, Land O'Lakes, but other brands in our company portfolio include Purina Animal Feed and Winfield Solutions Crop Inputs. We were formed in 1921 by farmers and agricultural producers right here in the upper Midwest. Today, we're still owned by farmers, but we've grown to be the second largest cooperative in the nation, a Fortune 200 company with sales of over $14 billion, doing business in all 50 states and more than 60 countries. In Minnesota alone, we employ over 2,200 people with an annual payroll of approaching $200 million. Like a lot of Minnesota companies, I believe that much of our company's success can be linked directly to the University of Minnesota, its research partnerships, and the many talented University of Minnesota graduates that President Kaler highlighted who are now employees of our company. I'm here today to express my support for the university's biennial budget request, particularly the MinDrive research proposal that President Kaler just outlined. The University of Minnesota is an important asset that brings value well beyond Land O'Lakes, but to the entire business community of the state of Minnesota. In my view, the university, with its scientists, its researchers, its business school expertise, and its students, is the state's single most important driving force for innovation and job creation. As the state's only comprehensive research university, the university partners with hundreds of companies to discover new products, new processes, new cures, new treatments, which stimulate the entire business community, and which also serves our common good. It's the eighth most active public research institution in the nation in a state that ranks 21st in population. Indeed, the U fights well above its weight in research, and I believe it can do even more in a more focused way with your support for MinDrive. I understand you'll soon hear from some of the world's leading scholars and experts on four important research areas that President Kaler outlined that will help emerging industries thrive. Of course, I'm particularly interested in MinDrive's food initiative, which touches the heart of our business at Land O'Lakes. Food production and agribusiness is the state's second largest industry, with 80,000 farms and 2,300 food companies generating more than $15 billion in agricultural products each year. We are engaged in one of, and my own belief is, the most vibrant growth industry of our era. As President Kaler noted, the global food supply will need to grow by nearly 70% by the year 2050 to feed a growing world population. To compete and excel in this growing global industry, Minnesota's agribusiness companies needs resources, expertise, and research that comes from the University of Minnesota. In particular, the work of MinDrive will help ensure that food products are safe, secure, and abundant. In the past year and a half, President Kaler has been at his job. He has emphasized the fundamental partnership from the university and the state's business community. Under President Kaler, the university is both open to business and open for business. And the MinDrive initiative, matching the U's strengths with the state's and industry's needs, is an example of his strategic thinking that has also included simplifying the way the university's intellectual property is shared with private business. In my area of food production, the university has worked with us on several fronts. This includes developing new approaches to protect the food system from attacks and breakdowns by using novel strategies for detecting contamination. The university has also developed new approaches for managing risk in the food supply chain and in advancing animal feed safety. One of the greatest areas of benefit includes educating the next generation of agribusiness professionals, providing leading industry expertise and academic programs for their continued growth. It has researchers investigating ways to more efficiently produce crops to feed a hungry world through increased use of modern business practices and the application of safe, proven technology on farm. The university's world-class scientists and the research and development units of many Minnesota companies often work hand-in-hand in developing new products which are healthier and more nutritious, and in solving difficult production problems relating to increasing output on farm in an increasingly sustainable manner. As a research university is a talent magnet, not just for leading scientists and scholars, it's a talent magnet for students. Students who can learn in the lab and classroom, and then who move directly into our workforce. There's a great tradition at the University of Discovery, from the first open-heart surgery to new agricultural technologies developed by Norman Borlaug. That kind of research not only creates jobs and industries, but changes and saves lives. Supporting research at the University of Minnesota means supporting this tradition of innovation, job creation, growth, and betterment of our community and beyond. I urge your support for MinDrive, which is to me a very important pillar of the university's budget request. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions? So do you have an internship relationship with the university?
We do, Madam Chairman. In the last 4 years, we have, I believe the number is 68 interns from the University of Minnesota, and
wow.
Our conversion rate is above 25%, so you can do the translation. I think we are one of the largest employers of University of Minnesota graduates. That may be surprising to you. Land O'Lakes is a privately held company. We're quiet in town. But many of those 2,200 employees that I noted are professional employees here in our offices. They're research scientists. They're marketers. And they're folks who help us lead this growing business. And when I talk about this great growth industry of food, we have had a great growth track since 1921. We started it very humble, farmer-owned roots, to be a Fortune 200, $14 billion company. But I will tell you, I just left a management meeting yesterday where we talked about, in the last 5 years, we've doubled our company's sales from 7 to $14 billion. And we just talked yesterday about doing that again in the next 5 years. But the missing link for us to be able to do that successfully is talent. It's insights and it's innovation, and that's one of the reasons that I'm here today. I believe sincerely that the university is very right in their focus in MnDrive and the areas, particularly food and agriculture, which I know most about. And I think it's good for the state. I also think it's good for beyond the state to have the university's
Great.
Focus.
Well, we have, as an area of interest for the committee, a strong commitment to internships, apprenticeships, and what that provides our young people. Also, in the area of mentoring, and we noticed in the university's materials, they talk about two programs. They talk about an A-plus counseling and mentoring program. Do you participate at all with mentoring?
You know, I'm not sure the mentoring program. One of the things we've recently done is get more involved with the student body through sponsoring professorships. So right now there is a Land O'Lakes professor in the Carlson School of Business. And what that translates to is increasing our involvement of both myself and, more importantly, my team directly on campus. And in a sense, that's mentoring. We're there. We meet students. We get involved. It helps us with understanding the best fit for that intern program you mentioned, but it creates relationships, and those relationships really are a form of mentoring.
Thank you.
Thank
public-private partnership is very much appreciated. Senator Sheeran.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank President Kaler for bringing agriculture to the table. I'm from southern Minnesota, and agriculture is probably our number one industry. You're talking about being number two intern and highlighting how big agriculture is and the food industry is in the state is not said often enough or explained often enough as to why these policies are so important. But you said something that reminded me of a meeting that I was in my community with agricultural leaders, and they talked about this work, the collaborations between K-12 and higher education in terms of drawing young people to be interested in the broad field of agriculture that is more, that includes, of course, on the farm, actual farming, but is much broader than that. So you talked about your need for talent and your ability to grow your company and have resources. Would you talk about what kind of talent you're talking about? What is it that you're looking for that we need to grow out of our higher education division?
Well, two comments. First, if I may, I appreciate the first part of your statement, which is calling attention to agriculture is important. You know, agriculture has been so successful. We've gone from a society in the 1930s where about a quarter of America farmed to a society where 1.4% of America now is involved in agriculture. Farmers have become just much more productive. And that's great. We enjoy the safest, most abundant food supply in the world and in history right here in this country. But one of the consequences, we don't have a lot of people talking about it and thinking about it. And if indeed we're going to double the food supply between now and 2050, or nearly double, 70% increase, we do have to get a re-engagement around thought leadership. And that leads me to the answer of your question. What kind of people do we need at Land O'Lakes? We need folks that can take insights and drive them into innovation. We go to market largely as a branded goods company on the food side, which most people think of us as, and that's the model there is consumer insights into product-based innovation, healthier, more nutritious foods and things like that, and we're doing that, and we're successful there. But what most people don't think about is an animal feed, animal nutrition insights, that lead to innovation in products that allow us to feed in an increasingly sustainable way, a more responsible way, contribute to animal well-being, and in crop inputs. We have to, if you think about this, it's daunting, a 70%, nearly a doubling of food production between now and 2050, President Kaler is accurate in his comments, with finite resources. We have 12% more arable land in this country. About half of that can be brought into production, and we already are in a water crisis. We don't talk about it because we don't have the pointy edge of that spear yet in our face. But we need folks who can drive insights around crop production, growing more with less input in our company. The good news is it's happening. The challenging news is we need a lot more of it. So we need trained professionals in R&D, in marketing, in animal nutrition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next, it looks like your faculty panel, President Kaler, if you would like to call your panel to the table. That way, if you get their names wrong, it's your responsibility.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will ask my colleagues to come and take, perhaps if we all four come together, we'll allocate.
And President Kaler, we'll add another chair. You're welcome to stay at the table.
Thank you.
Yes. It's like the musical chairs game. Hopefully you'll all have one when we stop.
We try to be entertaining.
Thanks.
These will be brief presentations.
Very good.
But I believe it's fun and quite insightful. So.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Francisco Diaz, and I'm a faculty member in the Department of Food Science and Nutrition in the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources. So I'm going to be trying to introduce first the first of the initiatives on food. And the great thing for me is that it's been already discussed, and it's been some of my punchlines have already been taken. So I'm going to try to cover some of this material. So let's see. All right. So what I'm going to try to do in the next 3 minutes is try to give you the answers for three questions. One is why food, which I think for me is an easy job, because everyone would agree that food is one of the fundamental needs of humans. So that's, but we already have some of the information that are provided in this slide that we have already discussed before. Another one is why do we need to work on this at this moment? Why are we concerned right now? And the third one is why the you? Why this particular topic is one of the most appropriate for the you to take or to try to tackle. So you heard it. Agriculture is a very important part of our state. Not only agriculture, but food spans from every single of the economic activities in the state. So it's been estimated just agriculture, depending on what number you hear, it goes several billion of contribution to our economy. You know that the state is one of the top producers in several agriculture commodities shown in this table. And as you heard, it is the home of many different food companies already, some of them like Land O'Lakes, General Mills, Cargill, and many other household names that are actually originated from here. They operate here as well as many other companies from other parts of the country and also from overseas. So we are aspiring to have a safe, sustainable, affordable, and nutritious food supply. The U.S. food supply as it is right now, it meets a lot of this criteria, but we're still yet to get to the point of optimum. And the main thing of why we need to act now is because we're facing plenty of opportunities and plenty of challenges that the risk of not acting is huge. So we are now in a global market. We are facing different potential threats like pathogenic bacteria. You've probably been hearing some of the news very often. We are faced with the issue of our health problems related to our eating habits. Obesity, diabetes, and other chronic diseases, that's an issue that needs to be tackled. And then we have other issues such as the changes that we've been implementing in different food supply, in different food production systems, the consumer trends and preferences that we have been evolving, as well as the potential threat for intentional adulteration, either because of a terrorist attack or because of economic adulteration. And also, we have the issue about the potential effects of climate change. More recently, we also have the need to act as a response to the series of regulations that now are coming out as part of the Food Safety Modernization Act. And in that regard, the universities should become a leader in policymaking as we move forward. So, the U, we are a multi-college institution that the food theme spans from many of our units. We are the three leading academic units are right now that have been leading this effort is my own college, Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources, the College of Veterinary Medicine, and the School of Public Health. But not only those units are involved in the topic of food, but other colleges such as Medical School, Biological Sciences, Nursing School, Engineering, Humphrey School. And the university as it is, the topic of food, it's included in as many as different 50 centers, units, institutes, or colleges. So food is not new for the university. And we are very well positioned because we have the support of many of our stakeholders. We've been working with many of the private sector companies that your names are very familiar with, as well as many other companies that are not typically involved with, or typically you don't think they're really directly involved with food, like 3M or Ecolab, but they have a major investments in the food business. So the government, we have a long history of working with state agencies and as well as federal, and also we have a number of networks of collaboration with multiple international institutions. Spanning from the United Nations and many other nations. So, in a nutshell, food is a great opportunity for the university, and we cannot really wait to invest in this initiative. And thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. Okay, Dr. Ebner.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. My name is Tim Ebner. I'm a professor and head of the Department of Neuroscience in the medical school at the university. And also, full disclosure, I got my MD, PhD there a number of years ago. I'm very pleased to be able to present this part of the MnDrive initiative. And why brain disorders? Well, approximately 1 in 5 Americans will suffer from a significant neurological or psychiatric disorder in the time of their life. And right now, the price tag on this is about $500 billion a year in health care and lost economic costs. Now, I'll show you this table and just mention a few of the diseases that we're faced with. For example, Alzheimer's here. Presently, about 4 million Americans have Alzheimer's, costing $60 to $70 billion a year. But this is a disease of aging, and in 20 years, this number will be about 10 million people, and there won't be enough doctors, nurses, or nursing homes to take care of these people. For example, on the psychiatric side, if you look at the numbers here for depression, 20 million Americans will have significant depression in their life. But look at the numbers for addiction. 30 million Americans have an addiction that's costing $160, $170 billion a year. Now, one of our real challenges is that We're still working very hard to understand the causes of these diseases, but that remains a challenge. But there are really exciting new ways to intervene therapeutically, which is the heart of this initiative. And that's neuromodulation. So neuromodulation is this idea where you intervene in the nervous system and you change or modulate the activity of brain circuits to decrease the symptoms and improve and restore normal function. Now, the prototype of this is, you probably heard about, is deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's disease. It's been a highly successful example. However, this is very much in its infancy, and there are a host of new technologies being developed, and what we need to do is discover what are the other diseases that we can approach with this problem, what's the best way to interfere in the nervous system to stimulate, what's the way we need to hook up machines to the nervous system, and what are the right targets in the brain to stimulate. So why Minnesota? Well, we already have great strengths in the medical school in neurosciences. Many people across a number of departments are working on this problem. And we have great strengths across the entire university in a number of centers that we have developed that are working with the diseases that we will potentially treat, a center for neuroengineering that will help, for example, with designing the engineering tools we need to interface with the brain, and then centers like the Centers for Magnetic Resonance Research, which gives us powerful imaging tools to understand how we're manipulating the brain with these techniques. Now, why Minnesota also is from the Minnesota industry is clearly already the world leader in neuromodulation. Medtronic has about 60% of the world share in the neuromodulation systems presently in the world. Boston Scientific and St. Jude Medical have been growing their neuromodulation programs. Presently, they have about $2.3 billion in revenue in this space, but this is expected to expand in the world by factors of two or three in the next 10 years. However, we can't be complacent. I list here three European companies that just came out with new modulation systems. They are claiming they offer more precise, more versatile control of the brain, and more efficient neuromodulation. So we have to invest in this important technology. So what is the impact? Well, it's nothing less than we would like to make Minnesota the world leader in neuromodulation. Now, most importantly, we can improve the health and reduce the suffering of Minnesotans with serious neurological and psychiatric diseases. We're already doing this. This is not a fantasy. So we are really in a position to expand this greatly. We will strengthen an already very powerful and strong medical device industry in the state. We believe this is a very fertile area to increase federal research funding into the state of Minnesota. And we know this is an exciting initiative that will attract the very best trainees and faculty to Minnesota. Thank you.
Dr. Ebner?
Yes.
Are other big universities or research institutions embarking on this same area? What does the competition look like in this area?
As you would expect, other major institutions are very engaged in this in neuromodulation. I would say, though, that on the scope that we've proposed would be very unique.
Okay.
To have a thing that crosses engineering, medicine, and industry, I think would be very unique in the United States.
Does the Mayo Clinic also tackle this?
Yes, the Mayo Clinic has their neurosurgery department certainly has people that are working with deep brain stimulation in conjunction with neurology. Yes.
Okay. Very interesting. Thank you.
Senator Bonner? This
Where
way.
Is it? Senator Sheeran.
I find this very interesting. I'm just curious to know, your research is to develop product, or is the research to utilize this neural modulation to impact those various disorders? Are you studying their impact by using neuromodulation on different parts of the brain, their impact on improved depressive symptoms or improved Parkinson's disease, or what all are you doing?
Madam Chair, the initiative starts with very basic research. to understand how to manipulate circuits in the brain, to manipulate those in disease models, can we correct symptoms, and then, though, directly to bring that into the patient. Okay. I don't think we're so much interested in making the product. That's really the industry side of the equation, because they need to go through all the regulatory steps. But we're everything up to that point, from the fundamental discoveries to actually being the first ones to put it into patients, to test its efficacy, and then again, hopefully, make it widely available state, country, world.
Fabulous. And just to follow up, where do you get your research subjects?
Right now,
Dr.
people
Abner.
Who...
Go ahead.
Right now, of course... When, for example, neurology and neurosurgery in the medical school would be evaluating people that would be the appropriate candidates. They'd screen for the existing procedures that are out there, for example, deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's, or even there's studies going on in depression for chronic pain. And so these are individuals who are suffering from these diseases, and it's suggested that this may be one way to help rectify and improve the quality of their symptoms and improve the quality of their life.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Okay. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maria Gini. I am a faculty in computer science and engineering. So the question is, why robotics and why now? And it's very simple. It's the economy. If you look at the numbers, if you look at the growth in the number of robots and in the market values of the robots in the last few years, you see a lot of growth. And you see this across many different areas. You see that in the industrial area, you see that in defense, you see that in, let's say, the robotics, vacuum cleaners we all have at home. Those are robots. They come out from the same technology. They don't cost much, so the dollar value is smaller, but they affect the life of lots of people. So why Minnesota? Minnesota has a lot of strengths. It has a very long history of strengths in industry and in academia. They're kind of unique niches. I just mentioned the niche we have in the miniature robotics for surveillance and reconnaissance with Recon Robotics and the Scout robots. It's been in the news many times. And we also have very strong excellence in the College of Science and Engineering in all the disciplines that are really the foundation on which you can kind of build robotics. And we have a lot of strengths at the K-12 education. This is a very short list, and I'm not going to do justice to all the local companies that are working. I just decided to mention a few of them. Some of the names are big names that I'm sure you all are familiar with. Some maybe you don't think about too much. Okay. There are kind of new areas growing, and since we were talking about food earlier, let's bring up agriculture, in which the corn growers and the soybean growers are very interested now in using unmanned autonomous vehicles to monitor their crops. So even areas in which robotics hasn't been used, now the technology is available and we can do a lot of things that were not done yet. I already mentioned, you know, reconnaissance and with the miniature scouts, and there is a very strong kind of industry-supported movement, and is the Robotics Alley, which is an initiative started by a company, really tries to polarize, get all the industries in the state to focus and say, we have strengths in robotics, we need to kind of support this area. Again, Minnesota, the university, we have a lot of strength in the academic disciplines. And I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about why robotics is important in education. And I'll mention just one example, the ones I have here. First, robotics is a varsity sport in which teams of high school students compete. And they don't compete on their own physical skills like you do in sports. They compete on their intellectual ability, their ability to build a product, which is a robot, which is built out of science, engineering, hard work, teamwork, and a lot of things, so they can win. And to me, this is in essence shows why we need robotics. Robotics is to have the new generation get interested in science and engineering. We kind of know that not too many of the high school or K-12 students are going to study science and engineering. They think it's boring, it's for old-timers like us, and they like to do something which is more fun. And I think, you know, if we can show that science and engineering is fun, is engaging, and there are a lot of jobs, you know, they're going to maintain us for the years to come, right? Because, you know, we're all getting old, and we need the new generation to really develop the technologies that are going to provide wealth to the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sadowski? Doctor?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Sadowski, and I'm a professor in the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, and also in the Biological Science Department, where I'm the director of the Biotechnology Institute. So I'm very happy to be here today and appreciate the opportunity to speak with you about advancing our industry and conserving our environment. And as you heard from several of our panel members here, we cannot operate in a vacuum, that all these things are interrelated to each other, especially the environment and agriculture. And I'd like to just briefly mention some of the partnerships we can have to make our environment better. So the question is, why now? It enhances the opportunities, really, for Minnesota's energy, agricultural, and mining industries through the use of science and technology that's not done in a vacuum, but done in a partnership. And this partnership is done both within the university, between the different colleges, where we utilize science, technology, and engineering together, and also to work with industry and also members of the state agencies, such as the Pollution Control Agency and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, to enhance the future uses of water and energy sources. So we'd like to use the new methods that we develop at the University of Minnesota that really involve microbiological systems that allow us to diagnose, treat, prevent, and overcome contamination problems arising from natural use of the environment, such as mining, agricultural activities, natural gas exploration. Typically, you hear the use of microorganisms used in a negative light, that they cause disease, but that's only a really small number of microorganisms. And the majority of them, in fact, are very important because, as I indicate here, they're the engines that drive our planet. They're involved in the cycling of all the elements, a reutilization of water, and really natural resources, and we can use these microorganisms to clean up the environment, which is called bioremediation of both water, soil, air, and humans. And the last part we call personal bioremediation, and it's becoming a really up-and-coming field where we can control the microorganisms that exist within your body and on your body to promote health. So it expands not only to the environment and our limiting resources such as water, mineral wealth, but also to human body and health. And we try to use these microorganisms to help currently stalled mining and industrial industries, enhance agricultural processes, and as you heard from President Kaler, water is going to become more limiting in the future, and we need to know how to recycle and reuse it. We also want to improve water quality throughout the Iron Range and the Mississippi watersheds. And, of course, we're going to be having more mineral mining in that state, in our state, and that involves water and water resources. And we can use microbiology and our understanding of these processes to remediate these events to make sure they're done in a healthy way. And hopefully, doing so will increase employment and commerce in these vital Minnesota industries that have been stalled over the last several years. So I'd like to thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just can't help to comment that I was the last half hour has been probably the most wonderful half hour I have had so far. Just having this brain power here really talk about the amazing things that we can do. I am going to follow up, and because we don't have time, Madam Chair. But I am very interested in exploring and having a conversation about global connections. Actually, I was given an assignment from my native country. I was there in December to come and connect with the university in areas that you described. But one being bioremediation, which is very important in Latin America right now. And then the other one about really working perhaps with Dr. Diaz-Gonzalez about figuring out some connections to work and food and science. So I am very thankful for this opportunity, Madam Chair. It was wonderful to hear from all of you about the work that is taking place at the University of Minnesota. Thank you, Dr. Keller.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray, and I share that sentiment. And I did wonder if, in fact, with regard to this last presentation, are you at all in communication with the mining companies who were working so hard to work out some of these issues? Are you a resource currently? Do we come to you and say, you know, I think one of the biggest impediments to moving forward with the potential mining up on the range is the concern about the environmental hazards. Are you in those discussions at all?
Not right now, Madam Chair, but we will initiate those very shortly. We are in conversation with those involved around the states, mostly in North Dakota and Wisconsin, in the fracking industry.
Okay.
Involved in discussion with those individuals as well.
Thank you, because it seems to me, Dr. Sadowski, that you would be very helpful in that conversation.
I agree.
Thank you. President K. Oh,
yeah,
Senator Sharon?
Just the more we talk, the more I want to talk to you. But you're talking about your contact with mining industries related to silica sand, I suspect, for fracking is in the Dakotas and in Wisconsin. But there's a huge issue and concern about this growing in Minnesota. Do you know, will you be engaged in helping answer the questions about environmental issues there?
We mostly are involved in developing new technologies to clean up the pollutants that are generated in the fracking process. So we're not involved in remediating issues directly in sand, but the chemicals that come up out of the ground or put down into the ground to recover those oil and gas resources.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share the enthusiasm for the strategic thinking here and in applying resources in a way that I think just pay dividends in so many different ways across all of these fields. My question, probably for you, Dr. Kaler, is these are four really great selected areas. Was there something, would you go deeper? What would be next, on a wish list? It seems like there are so many applications, and I know we have to pick and choose, but, would you wish to go a little deeper?
Madam Chair, Senator Kent, absolutely. We have no lack of imagination and impact of research at the University of Minnesota. We stopped at four out of respect for what we thought was a prudent budgetary request, but there are easily a dozen more areas that are exactly in this intersection of need and opportunity, and we'd like to talk about them with you in years to come.
Great. Thank you. I look forward to that.
Thank you. President Kaler?
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you to my colleagues. While our three students are coming forward, the final presenters this afternoon, I'd like to do two things if I would. One is to thank formally Chair Cohen and Regent Johnson, who are here, and to acknowledge Regent Beeson, Simmons, and Devine, who were with us for the bulk of the afternoon for the record. And I would like also to introduce to you Brian Herman, if you would stand up. Brian Herman is the new Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota. And Senator Torres-Ray, if we can interface the conversation with you and him around your question, I believe that will be most welcome. So with that, Madam Chair, let me introduce you to three reasons why we do what we do. Students
Very
at
good.
The University
we
of
look
Minnesota.
Forward to it.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Bailey Black, and I am from Willmar. I'm a senior majoring in marketing at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management, and I will graduate with about $36,000 of student debt. As President Kaler said earlier, the average debt for graduating students who have used financial aid is about $27,000, so I guess you could say I'm a little above average. I'm here to support President Kaler's and the university's proposal to freeze undergraduate tuition for Minnesota residents at its current rate. But more importantly, I'm here to speak for students who will be attending the U in the next 2 years who would benefit from such a cap on tuition. This proposal might not save my family or me any money, but it will save those coming behind me, and it will solve a frustrating problem caused by the out-of-control rate of increase for tuition. My story is very typical for U of M students. I would consider my family as very middle class. My mom is an insurance coordinator for an oral surgeon's office, and my dad is an auditor for an investment company. During my years at the U, I've been very fortunate to receive a scholarship, $21,000 in total, from the David Larson Scholarship Fund. I'm very appreciative of that, and I couldn't imagine having the additional debt to pay had I not received it. As a high school senior, you know what you're going to pay for tuition, but you don't know what you could be paying after that first year. You sit down with your parents, and you wonder how you can afford it, but it's very hard to make a solid budget. We sat down and determined what my debt might be had we followed our plan, but the amount we planned for back in 2009 has grown substantially because of the increase, because tuition continues to increase. In my case, since I've been at the U, tuition for Minnesota undergraduates on the Twin Cities campus has risen more than 16%. My family and I understood the costs when I entered the U, but as tuition went up each year, we faced the troublesome issue, planning and budgeting. Perhaps you all at the legislature can understand such a difficult situation. Halting tuition, even for 2 years, would be a great benefit to families as they plan and budget for their students' years at the U. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jillian Ricks. I grew up in Hermantown, Minnesota, which is a small town of about 8,000 people just outside of Duluth. This year, I'm a senior majoring in public relations in the university's College of Liberal Arts, a college that I'm deeply connected to and passionate for. This spring, I will graduate with about $30,000 of student debt, almost all stemming from federal Stafford loans. I, like Bailey, was fortunate to have a few scholarships along the way, and my parents were able to help some. My dad is an accountant, and my mother is a speech therapist. But at the end of the day, it is my education, and I feel my responsibility to ultimately pay for it. I do have a full-time job lined up for after I graduate in May. I'll be teaching elementary school as a part of Teach for America, which is a nonprofit that supplies new college grads to under-resourced schools across the country. My path to Teach for America was somewhat determined by the size of my debt. When I was a senior in high school, I never anticipated that my debt would be so large due to consistent increases in tuition, sometimes about 7.5% from year to year. Personally, I believe that higher education should be accessible for everyone. And frankly, it's really insane that no matter what your income level, about two-thirds of my classmates have had to take out loans. And those are the lucky ones who were able to make it work at all. I love the University of Minnesota, and I believe it to be a smart investment. But if I were a senior in high school right now, the rising price of tuition might make school selection more difficult. If I knew that the U of M was about to freeze undergraduate tuition for about 2 years, it would absolutely solidify my decision to enroll. Now I'm about to finish college with debt, but I have a real commitment to remain in the helping professions. Unfortunately, I know that the reality of this is that my salary probably won't be very high compared to most. One thing that drew me to Teach for America was that I will be paid an actual salary of about $30,000 to start. I did look into other programs, such as AmeriCorps Vista, but this is much lower at about $10,000 a year. In addition, Teach for America will delay my loan repayments, and it will provide me with an education payment bonus after my 2 years, which could amount to about $11,000 and allow me to receive my teacher certification. I think that my personal story strongly supports the university's proposal. Capping tuition will allow the U to be more accessible, it will reduce student debt, and it will free up students to make a real difference in the country and the world. Thank you.
Jillian, congratulations on being accepted to the Teach for America Corps, because that is not easy, and you have embarked on a journey where you will make a very big impact on many young children. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michael Nagorski, and I'm a fourth-year veterinary student at the College of Veterinary Medicine, and I'm very honored to be here today. I just drove up from the university's Dairy Education Center in Nicollet County, which is where I'm on a large animal rotation studying dairy production medicine. It's a state-of-the-art facility the U shares with the Davis Family Dairies, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe President Kaler visited there a few months back, even though I don't think he knows how to milk a cow, but at least I do. So next time, we'll teach him. So, I grew up on a farm near Windham, Minnesota, which is in the southwest corner of the state, and I hope to return to that area, which, like many communities in the state, is in need of health professionals of all sorts, including veterinarians. When I graduate in May, I'll be carrying about $140,000 in debt, And I have many classmates that will be graduating with much more than that. In fact, the average overall debt of veterinary graduates, including their undergraduate debt, according to last year's figures, was $181,700. I am very thankful to be below such an average. That's why I support President Kaler's and the university's proposal to provide loan forgiveness for veterinarians, physicians, nurses, pharmacists, dentists, who decide to work in various underserved areas, be it rural greater Minnesota, in communities or any inner cities, or on Indian lands. A little bit about me. I grew up on a family-owned crop farm. It's a corn and soybean operation. But since I really like livestock and animals, I started my own herd of Angus cattle while I was in high school. And also while I was in high school, I shadowed the local veterinary clinic, which is where I determined I wanted to be a veterinarian. So then I came to the U, which, as you know, is the only vet school in the state, and I got into what is called the VetFast program. The VetFast program is a program designed to speed up the amount of time it takes food animal interested students such as me to obtain a veterinary degree so I can more quickly return to underserved communities that need us. So instead of 4 years of undergraduate education, I was able to move into vet school after 3 academic years. So here's a little about, here's how the university's loan forgiveness plan would work. For each year I or others would be part of the program, I'd be forgiven 15% of my outstanding debt. So over the course of about 3 years on $140,000, I could see more than 38% of my debt reduced to about $86,000, which would be a huge blessing. Another consideration in this matter is the low salaries many are seeing. A new vet in Minnesota might have a starting salary of between $55,000 and $65,000, but it can be well below that in communities that are economically challenged or severely underserved. So reducing my debt burden would help me and it would help my community, which is why I support this proposal and I hope you do too. Thank you.
Thank you. And students, I do have a comment for you, Jillian, Bailey, and Michael. We don't think it's okay that you have the debt that you have. And this is the first year that I'm chair of higher ed, and for many of the members on the committee, it's new to them. And we are doing just everything we can to figure out how we can turn this thing on its head, because it's just unacceptable to us for you to have the kind of debt and the stress that's accompanying that debt, and for you to look at your future and not think that you can buy a house or you can buy a car when you leave. And we just think that's not okay. And so, you know, I don't know how this budget decision is going to work out. You know, the governor put forward an aggressive proposal to invest in higher ed. But with that, he also put forward, you know, many different ways to raise revenue. And you never know with the legislative process how it all shakes out. So, you know, you've got champions for higher ed around this table. But we can't promise how this thing turns out. But I have said before that I didn't like the link to, you know, within your request for a certain amount, that it's conditional in terms of capping tuition. So my message to you, Dr. President Kaler, is that I hope no matter what we do, and again, we're going to give it everything we've got to fulfill Governor Dayton's intentions, because I think that we owe the University of Minnesota, our students, and all the students of Minnesota the kind of increase that his budget called forth. And I'm disappointed with the disinvestment that's happened over the past decade. But I'm asking you, regardless, to find a way to cap tuition for these students. And again, you're new to the university, and you've got, you know, you and your staff is dealing with the fallout of a recession and all the budget challenges and the fact that your investment's been stagnant. So again, I'm hopeful, but I'm letting you know that we want to be your partners to figure out how this model can be transformed so that we don't have students walking out with the kind of debt they do. And with all respect, because I appreciate why it makes the most sense for the university to tie those two things together, because then you know you can accomplish your mission at the highest quality. So I can appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anyone else? Other comments, questions? It's been a very rewarding afternoon, I think, for the members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for your patience and listening.
Thank you.
Higher education.